So Maureen started the catering business.
Yes.
And when was that?
That was in the early 90s. It was kind of interesting. A friend called me and he said, my daughter's getting married this weekend and our caterer canceled out on us. Do you think Maureen could pull this off? Well, she was known as a lady who knew how to host a party, but she'd never really catered anything. And always looking for a way to increase volume or make a customer happy. Don't worry, we'll handle it. And I came home and told her, and she exploded at me and said, what are you thinking? What are you doing? I said, look, I'll work it with you. I'll help you. We did the event, and it turned out really well. After it was all over, she said, you know what? I think I might be able to do this. And I said, okay, let's go forward. She gradually just built the business. We never really promoted it or advertised it. She had a lot of corporate customers, grand openings, Christmas parties, those types of things. Did a lot of weddings in the hotels, like the Mayo, for instance. She did quite a few weddings there before they got their own food service and catering. It was a great thing to add to our business.
And the image of the store, if they thought it was a cut above, helped in that regard.
You're right, it did. That was beneficial to us also.
Because we want to do a really nice party. Well, who would do that but a nice store like Teddy's Fine Foods?
Right, and it was kind of funny. We laugh about this now, but I told Maureen, I said, like, my concept of the catering or the deli is if you have apples that are starting to turn or something, we make a bunch of apple pie, you know? And she was just the opposite. She would go in and handpick everything. So the manager would say, Maureen came in here and she took all my good stuff, you know? And that's how she did it, so... We argued about that in the beginning, but I began to realize, hey, this is working out, and people respected it. She was very successful in that business.
And that catering continued to 2016.
Yeah. In fact, she had a tremendous Christmas season this past season, holiday season.
When did you become the manager of the store?
My father retired in 1985. I believe it was March of 1985. So it was right about that time that I actually was running everything. But prior to his retirement, my brother was involved with me at that time. We were running it pretty much for the maybe 5 years prior to him retiring.
But it was in 85 then you officially?
Yes.
Became the manager of the store.
And owner.
And owner, right.
Yeah.
Were there times 85 to 2016 or whenever the business was slack, was off? We need to do something, or can we even last?
Oh, there were many times, and the time that stands out in my mind was in the mid-90s. Albertsons had just opened at 15th and Lewis, and it really hurt our business. We had done well in the early 90s. And interestingly enough, we got all that business back plus some from Albertsons before it was over. But at the time, when they first opened, they opened and Wild Oats at 41st and Peoria, where Whole Foods is now, opened on the same weekend. So it was really tough, and they hurt our business. I was bleeding off cash, and I went to Hale Hazel, whom we were not supplied by at that time, and said, would you be interested in being an equity partner? And Bob Hawk was the head guy at Hale Hazel in those days. And he said, Scott, we'll do it. We respect your company and we'd like to be partners with you, but we have to own 51%. So in my lease at that time with Helmerich & Payne, the owners of Utica Square, if the ownership of my company changed in terms of control of the company, it had to be approved. And I did all my negotiation of leases with Mr. Helmerich himself. So I called Walt Helmerich and I said, Mr. Helmerich, this is the deal. He said, are you sure you want to do this? And I said, I have to do it. I need to do it. He said, will you come up here with Bob Hawk? I want to talk to you. So we made the pilgrimage up to his office. He sat down and he really grilled Hawk. And Hawk wasn't the kind of guy that liked to be grilled. But being grilled by somebody like me is one thing. But if you're grilled by Walt Helmerich, you accept it. I remember to this day, I'll never forget this. Walt looked at Hawk and he said, I want you to own 49% and I want Scott to own 49% and I'll own 2%. Well, if you think about that, a guy that owns 2%, he could kind of throw his support either way, depending on what he wanted to do. It was a very shrewd proposal on his part, but Hawk looked at him and he said, no, 51%, and that's it. So thankfully, Mr. Helmrich agreed to it. We went forward from there. Eventually, Hale Halsall went bankrupt, and right before they did, we spun our company out of it, and Maureen and I ended up with 100% again.
Wow.
It ended up working out for us because we bought it back for a lot less than we sold it for, our share of it. That worked out. But yeah, that was a tough time.
That's sleepless nights time.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, I remember thinking, well, this may be it. You know, I may be looking for a new career.
Well, you give Walt Helmrich, who we've interviewed, of course, and is one of the inspirations for this very website, credit for grilling him, but it didn't really work out the way Walt wanted. He lost on that deal, apparently.
Well, he didn't lose any money.
No,
his proposal was not accepted.
Right, right.
But he got some things into the lease that protected me, and I always appreciated that. He was a supporter of ours, and he wasn't one of the kind of guys that passed out compliments all the time. But he stopped me in Utica Square and he said, Scott, I just wish the other tenants around here operated like you did. And I said, well, what do you mean by that, Mr. Helmrich? And he said, you're open 7 days a week, long hours, and you promote like crazy. Of course, as a landlord, that's what he wanted.
Right. And then he was supporting you, local family. He wanted that to be local, local, local. And he was...
That meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
And he wanted to have a certain mix of tenants in there that would serve the neighborhood. And a grocery store was important to him to have there.
Yes, I'm sure it would have pained him to know that you have closed to this day. He would not have appreciated that very much because he wanted local, local. He was known for bringing small independent businesses that he spotted in the community into Utica Square.
I remember he tried to bring in Relay, the Vietnamese restaurant operator. Relay, I think, decided that he couldn't pay the rent, but that was an example of a business locally that would have been a great fit there. Walt tried to recruit him, but he did recruit a lot of people.
Yeah, Queenie's is one of those that was
right.
Recruited. We could probably name some others, but at any rate, you made it through that by the hair on your chinny chin chin, as we say.
Exactly.
And then life got good again.
Yes, it did. And in fact, I began to realize that we were underpricing our product. Albertsons, when they put the store in, they were higher than we were on everything. Yet they were taking this business away from us. And I thought, well, heck, I'm not going to stand for that. So we came up on our prices. Ted Robertson, that owns Robertson Tire, loves for me to tell this story. We came up on our prices to meet them. And as a result, we got more gross profit, better margin, and we began to get business back from them. I know that sounds strange, but that's exactly what happened.
And you mentioned Wild Oats. They're no longer here. Albertsons is gone. And so these two competitors that you thought, oh no, this is our demise, are not there.
That's true. And,
yeah.
You know, two of our other big competitors are gone, McCartney's and Sipes, and they were good operations in their day.
Yes. You had a sushi bar, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
Tell us about that. When did that come in?
We put that in the 90s. I think it was the late 90s. I was at a food show, and we met someone who did these sushi bars. It was actually a company in South Carolina. They had a team of Burmese chefs that did this. We were talking about it, and I had a little bit of a concern about it because I don't know anything about sushi, really. I mean, as far as making it. They assured me, hey, we have the chefs trained, we have the menu, and these people are hard workers, which they are, and they'll come in and they'll do the whole thing. So I said, okay, we'll give it a try. And it worked out. They made it fresh every day in the store. And I had many customers say, this sushi's as good a sushi as we can get at the nicer sushi restaurants in town.
Mm-hmm.
great stuff.
The Tulsa World gave you a lot of free media. They wrote about you many, many stories. And maybe this will bring some memories to you. They were writing about fun, funky, chunky treats, chocolate-covered popcorn and pretzels, along with tins of Wilkin and Sons Tiptree Christmas pudding are there to greet you when you first enter the iconic specialty grocery store.
We had a good relationship with the Tulsa World. And, of course, in those days, the Lorton family owned the newspaper, and they were good customers of ours. We were customers of theirs. You know, we did a lot of advertising. But they treated us well over the years.
Then just down the aisle, past the perfect rows of shiny fruits and vegetables, come the Assumption Abbey fruitcakes. No kidding, fruitcakes, they wrote.
Well, I think the reason they wrote that way is because fruitcakes became out of fashion, more or less. And I remember people used to come in the store and tell me, just don't give me another one of those fruitcakes for Christmas, whatever you do. But the fruitcakes that were made at the Assumption Abbey, which is in Missouri somewhere, were really, really good. And they had that mystique behind them. You know, they were made by the monks at the Abbey. They were a cut above, so they did sell.
Was that your major form of advertising, was the newspaper?
Yes, it was. Over the years, we did quite a bit of radio. We were on your station, of course. You probably heard our commercials.
KRMG.
KRMG, yes. For many years. That was a great Tulsa station.
Yep.
That's where our audience was, on radio.
Mm-hmm.
We liked radio because it was a little more targeted. You know, television is kind of the shotgun blast approach at advertising. You hit a lot of people, but you hit a lot of people that you don't need to hit. You know, somebody living in the rural areas outside Tulsa or something, we're not going to get them as a customer more than likely. So the radio was more targeted and a better value for us, we thought. And KRMG was a huge player in that for us.